time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon.
This is Ali Muhammad.
And this is In the Conversation,
the podcast.
Yes, yes, yes.
One time.
Back again.
Yes, sir. One time.
There it is. Crystal clear in your ear. Yeah, for real. Crystal clear, motherfuckers. Audio files out there listening.
The audio files is on me. What's wrong with your audio?
Oh, shit.
I need to teach you how to record.
Oh, man.
Watch this video.
That was me. That was on me that time. I ain't going to lie to you. I tried my best, too. I was trying to, pump the audio. I did a whole lot in the program.
Believe me, I understand you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you already know. Yeah. So hopefully it's coming in a little better now.
Yeah, we should be good.
Yeah, man. But anyway, man, how you doing, man? How was your, how'd you celebrate your birthday?
I'm doing good, man. I was, we went to this restaurant here. I can't even remember the name of it. On the south side, like soul food, soul fusion type of deal. Where, they got some soul food place, but it's like kind of fused with some other cultures.
Yeah. It could go left with that sometimes.
Yeah. It's slick niggatry. You know what I'm saying?
Like sleight of hand niggatry.
Yeah, shit. You know what I'm saying? That shit funny. Is real slick because in New York, we had this spot. Mm-hmm. Peaches, right? You know Peaches. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Down the corner before Peaches, there was a Aquaba Mansion, right?
Oh, old school, yeah.
Yeah, the Aquaba restaurant, right? And so after Aquaba, before Peaches came along, there was this little hybrid restaurant that came called Petite Bossum, which like some African guys ran, and it was like a soul fusion type of place. And it's one of them places where, shit's expensive. You know what I'm saying? The little tapas and the, appetizer bites and your fancy entree, you ended up spending $130, you know what I'm saying, on a typical visit. And that's 2-3 people, you know what I'm saying? Like, so if you got a family of five, you spend down $200, and which means I'm not visiting this place that often. You know what I'm saying? This is not my weekly, we hungry, let's go down the block. Nah, this is we coming here once every 2-3 months at best, which kills a space, you know what I'm saying? And so one of the beautiful things about Peaches coming in was that it was something on the menu for every budget range, you know what I'm saying? In the entrees, in the appetizers. So if you wanted to get out of there and you only wanted to spend $25, $30, then you can get you a burger and an appetizer of wings. You know what I'm saying? $9 wing and a $12 burger and, get on out of there. But, Petite Bossum didn't have that option. You had to spend either way. It was a no combination where you was going to get out of there under $50, $60. So it's one of them type of places where you look at, like, I wonder how long this neighborhood will be able to sustain this restaurant at these prices when you only come in here every once in a while or just to go to the bar or, something like that. That's what I'd be like, man, I'm looking at this thing. I was like, you can't walk this motherfucker without $45, $50. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's cool if that's what you're trying to do and if you're in a space that can sustain it. But like when you off in the neighborhoods, you sometimes wander. But it is Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? Niggas do travel. You know what I'm saying? Niggas do spend money. So I'm not gonna wish no ill will. I ain't gonna say the people's names so y'all could, wish ill will on the people or nothing like that.
Right. Instead, go ahead, keep going.
But you know what I'm saying, it is like, come on, man. You know what I'm saying? I always look at restaurants like that kind of funny because it has no it's giving no real idea of a general consumer. It's just looking at one type of consumer. I'm coming to drop a bunch of bread on a, Friday, Saturday night. But it's Tuesday, and you just a little, you know, you just got a little appetite or something. You mm-hmm. you thinking, oh, let me go on down there and get up out of there with 30-35. You know what I'm saying? Get me, you know, a slight entree and, you know, keep it moving. Nah, buddy. Not when all the entrees are market price or, you know what I'm saying, 55, 60. Like, wait a minute now. I won't be back here no time soon.
Yeah. Because it's like you don't really have any regard for, you saying market price, but you don't have no regard for the environment that you in,
right,
in the neighborhood you in. This is not the place, to your point, that's going to be able to shoulder these prices,
right,
you know, in a frequent clip. So it's right. kind of like, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I've come across stuff like that, right? And I was just having a conversation with my man Condo yesterday. We were just talking about not particularly this thing, but just in general, how much shame can be a catalyst for overspending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, God forbid you say, hey, this shit a little expensive, you know. You know what I mean? Especially if you a single man. See, you got a wife and children, you established, you know what I mean? It's an understanding, you know what I mean? Like, if you a single man and you say some shit like, woo-wee, it's a little much. Oh, you veer into broke nigga territory immediately.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where you almost got to do your reconnaissance beforehand.
No
you
doubt.
Need to know what you're walking into. Don't walk into some of these places blind. But, you know, you should know what things are going to cost. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
And then it's just, you know, it's like, and what I don't like now, I'm seeing a lot of this. Sad to say, I'm seeing a lot of this in New York where, and I'm sure I see it on the gram, and I'm sure it's all over, but I see a lot of it in New York. And with these, you know, we talk about the place to be tax before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like the TikTokification of food places has added to it. So there's all of these, you know, as a lot of people call them, the green grass wall restaurants.
Right.
And the little
the brunch spots.
You know, but exactly, with the little what do you call it, the neon light
mm-hmm.
mantra caption wall right. or whatever, that's really what you go for, and right. the price points are crazy, but the food is bland as fuck.
Right.
It's like, come on, the drinks are kind of whack. Mm. It's like, you know,
ain't no excuse
I'm
for that.
Not mad at huh
ain't no excuse for that. You know.
It's no excuse for it. It shouldn't be any excuse, but it's more so like, it's like people are building a vibe more than they're building a restaurant.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
a place to see and be seen and to capture content, but you know, nobody's really talking about the food.
Right.
And it's so disappointing because you almost find out a little too late.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Another yeah. slick thing they doing now. You know, some of these green grass restaurants, you know, they mm-hmm. putting in a nice little interior decor across the paint job. And, you know what I'm saying, shine up the floor. And then they open the spot, and it's tapas, right? Mm-hmm. Tapas is becoming the new excuse for just, I'm overcharging y'all. Take that.
That's what it translates into.
Right.
Take that.
So you go to tapas, right? I uh-huh. went to a spot before I got sick. And it, you know, went to it, you know what I'm saying? It was, you know, new. They drop it in, okay, boom. This $9, that $9, you know, and that's cool. Like, okay, that looked reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
What the wings tapas and the, you know, crab toast tapas, the whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you get the wings. It's four wings. You know what I'm saying? The crab yeah. toast is like a little finger sized crab toast of two little finger sized mm-hmm. pieces. And you're like, wait a fucking minute, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
9 uh-huh. and 12 is $20-something. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I ain't got enough yes. to, you know what I'm saying, knock the sting off my blood hunger. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right, yeah.
Tapas is really a bar. that, you know what I'm saying, got some bar food for you for a very high mm-hmm. price. And if you can make it to full, you can. But if that ain't mm-hmm. the option. That ain't the goal here. The goal here is just take the burn off, let you soak some of this alcohol in, because this right here ain't having it. And so I was like, man, I won't be visiting this place much often. And I don't want to talk about a lot of bad stuff about things. It's just that we talk about it. It's just little slick stuff these restaurants are doing nowadays to get you up off of a few more dollars than you would have spent before, mm-hmm. which I don't have no problem with. You know what I'm saying? But don't guys the whole thing like, golly, dog, I'm not even going to get full based off of what y'all serving. You know what I'm saying? It's the, I call it the petite bottom effect, because they were doing stuff like that. They didn't call it tapas, but their appetizers portion was so small. And you'd be like, God damn, $19 for this? And and you're not getting what you feel is worth your dollar that you're spending to go out mm-hmm. and eat. And nobody wants that. So I just beg the restaurants to kind of view their base, you know what I'm saying, what works, mm-hmm. what doesn't, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes it works. Sometimes you just got a spot, people just want to go to drink. And you just had to know that. You had to go somewhere else to eat first. And then come here and mm-hmm. get a little, you know, a nosh of wings just to, you know what I'm saying, settle on in for the evening.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to be hungry and feel like you got. That's a tough cocktail.
Mess around and have a and slick not even server. Drunk.
Yeah, not even drunk either. So now you just feel terrible. I tell you something else that adds to that whole tapas fusion wave, where it's like I kind of side eye when I see it now, but it's kind of new. I had to go look it up because I was like, I'm seeing this, I'm hearing about this shit everywhere, but omakase style sushi. Have you heard about this?
What's that?
Exactly. Seems like it's a whole new wave. Like, it's not enough to go to like a sushi bar no more. Now all the little sushi spots are omakase style. And they way more expensive. And it's like they spin it as like it's limited. There's small little places, omakase. So I was like, yo, what's up? What does omakase mean? I asked my homie who's Japanese. He was like, he didn't even know what that meant. He said that shit mean at least $160 a person. But omakase basically means, the phrase omakase literally means leave it up to you. Mm-hmm. So it's most commonly used when dining at Japanese restaurants, where the customer leaves it up to the chef to select and serve seasonal specialties. You know what I mean? So it's an improv spot. It's a whip up. It's whatever we got.
You ain't even getting what you're asking for.
No, you're not. You're not. That's the crazy thing. It's not even customized. This is whatever we got on deck, Pop. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Today, this is what we got. Thank you. Here we go.
I'm looking at one spot down here. Looking for indulgent mm-hmm. sushi takeout option. Whatever, blah, 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 mm-hmm. offers a bento box omakase for just $89. Shit, fuck that.
Yeah.
Regular sushi is down there, cost that.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick all the stuff you want.
Yeah.
We got them spots in Brooklyn. They take out spots. And they Japanese, but they offer like some little side items of some nigga shit. You know what I'm saying? So you can get... Uh-huh. You can get some sushi and a wing, you know, things of that nature. It was fried rice, all of the mm-hmm. you know, typical takeout New York stuff. But they do have some sushi that's aight. And you think, you know, yeah, all right, I'm gonna give me a little rice and some wings. Everybody gonna be satisfied. Let's top everybody off with a little sushi. Shit,
mm-hmm.
even that damn takeout sushi be $55. You're like, God damn, how my bill get to be $102? That $55 takeout sushi.
That's how they got you. Yeah. Sushi's so exotic. You know, it's crazy.
That should be a piece of fried shrimp chopped in the bowl and wrapped in some rice fucking shit.
Were wrapped in some Carolina rice at that. You know what I mean? Even sticky rice, it's just some other shit. Some Kenya. But But on that wave, on the opposite side, I was watching this show on Netflix called Midnight Diner. I was watching a couple episodes. This Japanese show takes place in Tokyo, but it's called Midnight Diner. It's basically the diner is open from like midnight to 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. It's a little small spot, and anybody could come through if they know about it. It's real after-hours speakeasy type of energy. And you walk in there, and basically it's the opposite of omakase. My man will make anything you want as long as he got the ingredients on hand. Mm-hmm. So he's like, whatever you talking about, yo, can I get a ginger roll with some yellow tail and da 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 da? He's like, no problem. He makes shit just, you know, like built to order, like whatever you ordered, straight there, Dapper Dan type shit. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fly. It's like a little, it's like this little restaurant, and they got their regulars, and there's all like an assorted, you know, spectrum of people that come through there. Mm-hmm. You know, some people from the underworld, from like the Yakuza, this woman who's a stripper, this other dude who's like a trans dude, other old guy. But it's just like, it's like a motley crew cheers. It's just real interesting. I've only watched a couple episodes of it, and it's like, I forgot how I found out about it, but it's an interesting show. But it just made me think about that, because that's the opposite of omakase. Now, I can understand that.
Right, I can understand that.
Some shit up. Yeah, some bespoke shit. But, yeah, man. So, yeah, so back to that. So, you went there. You went to the spot, Southside, for the Born Day.
Oh, man.
Fusion.
No, it was cool.
Let's get back.
It was cool. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Again, I'm in a situation where I can't eat that much no way. So.
Right.
The food was actually good, though. You know what I'm saying? It was good. Like, okay. The little fusion was fused. And you know what I'm saying? but I can't eat a whole lot. You know what I'm saying? And it's big portions. So.
Okay.
So I ate probably a third. You know what I'm saying? I was like, wee. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Then they had, you know, big desserts and, you know, shit like that. So it took me about took me about three servings to kill it, but it was good. So had a good time, and then other than that, you know what I'm saying, just really, so I'm not outside like that, so it's really just you know, friends and people calling and hitting you up, so you know, doing that all day. My birthday was really just going out to eat and really, you know what I'm saying, talking to my people all day and, you know, checking in, everybody checking in, you know. I guess, you know, that's one of the better parts. You know what I mean? That you get, you check in more often with the people. You know what I'm saying? You appreciate it more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? People, you know what I'm saying, appreciate you being around to talk to. So.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's a good look. So I did that. You know what I mean? Nothing special. Mm-hmm. I didn't kick it. I didn't go out and get towed down and tear up the night. But.
Right.
It was good.
He was here. He was in the building. He was enjoying life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good, man. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear. Trying to think what's going on with me, man. I was earlier today, I was listening to the Blueprint Jay-Z album. I think that might be my favorite Jay-Z album.
It is. Honestly. To me, that's mine.
Yeah. It's definitely in the top three. I used to, you know, I got Reasonable, Blueprint, and Black Album as my top three. Mm-hmm. But, I think Blueprint to me, it's the de facto. It's just a vibe damn near all the way through. I mean, you know, dropped on September 11th. I remember that time. That was being that vibe. That was just that whole, it kind of birthed the careers of Just Blaze and Kanye. Mm. Like it was a moment. Like it's some shit on there. Yeah, that's a great album. That's for sure a great album. I think it might be my favorite Jay album.
For sure to me, because, you know, one, it was just so solid all the way through. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm from Miami, so you know what I'm saying? You get halfway through a New York record, it's gonna get New Yorkish. You know what I'm saying? to a place where, you know what I'm saying, you're not used to as a Southerner. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, they way New York. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. One more Pete Rock record.
Ain't too
nigga.
Specific. Right. Right, so, right. You said what?
One more Pete Rock record, record, nigga.
Oh. Damn. He's like, enough.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying sold. To the southern the southern ear. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That hard
your
boom.
Your ballad is different.
That boom bap, you know what I'm saying? Headphone beat is different.
Right.
Than, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So during that time when it dropped, I was trying to it was right before it dropped. I was trying to get this job at Def Jam. And and so, you know, I had made it to a second round, and one of the things was create a marketing plan for the blueprint. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time with that record. I put a whole package together based off of that album. And you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I probably spent more time with that record than any of the other Jay-Z records, but I enjoyed the whole thing. So I was like, damn, this shit solid as fuck. This nigga done took off. You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't imagine his future, but in that present, you like, God damn, this nigga killing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was a statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't imagine what he's doing now and what he was able to accomplish. It was just like, well, this nigga done took off from the field. You know what I'm saying? And that was, that was, to me, that was what he was known for to me as far as positioning. His positioning was more pristine. He had a clear vision of where he was at amongst the crowd, and he stayed there in that place until the American Gangsta album. But we're not gonna talk about that.
You ain't like the American Gangsta album?
No, I didn't like it. I think he broke positioning on that album. That probably was the first album he was actually on the stove cooking crack. Like, nigga, you ain't never even touched no dope. Like, nigga.
Right. He was always third person. Right. Yeah. It's
like, wait a minute now. You at the stove like Master P?
Exactly. I'm a Kasi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Have it your way, baby. Or whatever I got, nigga, what I'm going to cut this with.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he broke positioning. So that, to me, it was like, damn, after all this time, you go to be the president a Def Jam,
right?
And now you on the stove, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like that didn't, it didn't compute. It didn't make sense to me. You know what I'm saying? That was like a Pharrell move.
Funny.
Like Pharrell makes songs, so he just jump on whatever. Nigga, I'm whipping the rock. You know what I'm saying? Because he's just making a good
on the
song.
Blue Magic record.
Right.
Yeah.
But
for
him, it was like, wait a minute, nigga, you supposed to be the big time nigga. Nobody ever see. You know what I'm saying? You just whisk past in some luxury vehicle that we've never seen before. All of them, everyone that ever came out. Like, nigga, not at the stove.
He almost disappointed.
I was. Oh,
disappointed. Like, what is going on?
Nigga, you at the stove?
It's your business plan. Yeah, that's funny. I've never thought about it like that, but, yo, that is fucking hilarious.
I mean, ever since...
Not at the stove.
Ever since the beginning, you know what I'm saying? Like, after the first album, and he came, and I was at the radio station at the time, and the second album was about to load up, you know what I'm saying? So, like, oh, shit, here come this nigga with the Ain't No Nigga Who Shot His Video in Miami going to the bank, you know what I'm saying? A New York nigga that understand, you know? So, it's like, boom, they dropped the first single, which was Sunshine with Babyface, you know what I'm saying? Everybody kind of know that was a, you know, off to the left type of record for a nigga who had a record like... that first record, Reasonable Doubt.
Yeah. He was chasing that bad boy success at that moment.
Right. So I'm in the radio station. I get it. Oh, shit, Jay-Z. Put it on. You know what I'm saying? Just be my sunshine. You're like, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. And so you mildly disappointed, like LL Walking with a Panther album. And then... take it, turn it over. Okay, Streets is watching. I hope he do something on this. Beat come in, you like, oh shit. And this nigga comes in and say, if I shot you, I'm brainless. You shoot me, you famous. I was like, God damn. I've never heard any better rap positioning than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, nigga, I'm so ahead of your ass, I can't even fuck with you. Cause if you fuck with me, you famous. If I fuck with you, nigga, I'm stupid as fuck. So I was like, man, this nigga is thinking, man. Golly. And he went on to prove that he was gonna stick to that positioning, and that's how he placed himself, nigga. You pouring Cristal, that was me first, nigga. Yeah, we was on the yacht. Y'all was still pouring Mo. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, nigga, I've been ahead of you niggas. Oh, you niggas wearing gold, nigga? Fuck that. I'm switching my whole fucking shit to platinum.
And y'all thought it was silver. And, that's the funny part.
You niggas ain't even gonna understand what niggas happened. And gold went away for quite some time.
It did. It did. Yo, Jay used to put a lot of shit on the shelf for a bit. For a bit. That shit, speaking of shame, he was the king of that shit.
Man, gold went away, nigga. Niggas was all platinum silver looking. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't no gold, man.
Which is crazy.
You wearing your gold. Because
when gold came back, I missed gold. I'm not going to lie. Right. I like how gold looked. But back then, yeah, you would have stood out.
You stood out.
That shit was the yellow teeth of jewelry.
Yeah, like, nigga.
Yeah, man. You, it was nasty.
you have on a goddamn gold presidential, nigga. Like, you was the shit last year. And niggas was like, B. Nah, you in Miami on South Beach with your gold presidential. Niggas stunting on your ass with some with some silver, nigga. Not even platinum. Yep. Nigga come through with some silver. White gold. Uh-huh. Tear you up.
Yeah. Make you go back to your hotel room. Sad. Oh, shit. Shit is sad. Oh, man.
So,
yeah, that's wild.
I always gave it to him because he positioned himself. He had a vision enough to position. Like, when most niggas was still robbing or on the corner or at the stove, you know what I'm saying? I'll fuck you up. That was the rap positioning of the time. If you was in the streets, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You were a tough guy, or you were able to be tough. You was Mobb Deep. You was Biggie. You was all these guys. Biggie, he did have a flossy side, but he was still in front of his mama's house selling crack to save his daughter. You know what I'm saying?
So
you're taking that most obvious dope position, your entry level rise, where you come out, you get you a pack, get on the block, get you some money enough to stunt on niggas, buy you a car, get you some clothes. That was rap positioning. He didn't do that. He skipped all the way over there. He went to places niggas didn't really know. And it put him in a different place.
Do you think he repositioned himself after American Gangsta, or you think it just kind of...
Well...
What do you think?
After the retirement, what was the album after American Gangsters? With the go-go band and all that, you know, the Hustlers in the Building.
What's that, Kingdom Come?
I don't know the name song. But he did.
No, I think Kingdom Come came before that, because I don't know. Let me look. Go ahead, keep going.
From what I remember, he went back to be a big timer. Of course, he was a big timer then, you know what I'm saying? But he went back to his hustling, like, we going to do it real big, ahead of everybody ways. But I think it started to splinter off, because while he was, I made all this money, I'm still getting a little more conscious about where I'm at with life, especially after he got married and, you know what I'm saying, and we go into the 444 era. You know, it's more about what can I do with this voice than I've been doing. Like, even when the 444 album came out, he started seeing videos, him talking about therapy and shit like that. It's places niggas had never been, you know what I'm saying, in rap. Like, what, therapy, nigga, you apologizing to your wife, nigga, what the hell? You know what I'm saying? So he was still.
Don't you got money?
Right. Yeah. Like, nigga, you can get anybody, my shit. She needs you. But he's seeing it like a grown person. Again, ahead of the curve, but now how do you sell that to the masses? The masses are still in their own place. They could accept a nigga who made it to the top of what they know. But now, when you have to start at the bottom of what they don't know, they don't know that shit. Like, nigga, I don't know nothing about that. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's a tough position to age and be a rapper and try to break the mold of the aging rapper, and rapper ain't supposed to age. And you doing all these things simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that I'm looking at the layout... this is what I think too.
So
Black Album, then Kingdom. Huh?
Go ahead.
So Black Album came, and that's when he retired for the second time. And then Kingdom Come, that's when he came back, and people thought that shit was terrible. Which I think, even in that moment, I was a little let down just because the expectations were so high. But I don't think Jay-Z has a terrible album, and I don't think it's that bad. There's some records on Kingdom Come. It's just that it wasn't what people wanted. Right. So I think that's why he went to the stove. He had to remind niggas, like, he had to really get, like, he had to lean all the way in.
So is this, you know what I'm saying? To like, this is before American Gangster?
Yeah, okay. Kingdom Come was right before American Gangster.
Okay, cool, cool.
Then American Gangster. That's why he went back to the stove, because I think the, you know, because that was, if you remember, that was his whole thing of, you know, I saw the movie, and
I was inspired.
It just made me want to do it. Kind of, he kind of spun a little bit of that blueprint narrative. I just, couple weeks, couple days, I just turned this thing around real fast. Blah blah blah. I just tapped in. It felt it my soul. You know, one of those.
I can understand the tapped in. You did it real quick. You wanted to take advantage, but I don't believe the narrative. That's where I was like, oh man, the narrative is getting shaky. You know what I'm saying? Because one, I didn't believe the lyrics, you know what I'm saying, of the record as far as his brand. Not that he didn't never cook crack in front of the stove. I didn't say that. Just saying as far as his brand, it didn't make sense. And then he had, if anybody out there got the YouTube, he has a, and you know this, I always tell you this. He has an interview with Charlie Rose about this album.
Okay.
And on that interview, Charlie Rose is asking him how, you know, he's telling that narrative of how he came up with it. And he was just coming home one night, late at night, and Puff called him to come to the studio. And he was already at the house.
Right.
He about to walk in the door. So Charlie Rose just did some regular ass journalist shit. So he was like, so Sean Puffy Combs never called you to come to the studio late at night? You know what I'm saying? It's in the middle of this whole narrative. So he leaning into it. He like, you know, and he got a voice to it. He like, he telling a short story. And so, so Sean Puffy Combs has never called you to come to the studio late at night. And this nigga Jay-Z broke character so bad. He said, like, he said he was in the motherfucking refrigerator late at night drinking the last bit of Kool-Aid. Sean, you in there drinking that goddamn Kool-Aid? Lips all red.
I gotta watch that.
Man, look at that shit. Man. I was like, man, this nigga lying like a motherfucker. But it's okay. Oh, it's marketing. Man. It's marketing. I get it. It just did not fit. Right.
Stick
his
to
brand.
The script. Yeah. With improv on that ass. I enjoy American Gangster because I like the shout out to Grime Music, Sean C and LV. I know they had. They had big hand in that, shaping some of them records. Shit was fire. Yeah, I guess Blue Magic was definitely the, you know, I'm fucking whipping up. But I think, you know, Rock Boys and all that other shit, sweet. There's a couple records on it.
No, I'm then not saying that it's not. I'm not saying that it's not. He did get back to his big time of ways. I'm just saying his whole fucking career from from the first album, he had Sunshine as a little blip. But Streets is Watching, his positioning was solid. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm bigger than that. I'm doing bigger than that. I'm not doing no dumb shit. I'm not even putting myself in that position. You ain't going to never see me in that position to cook and crack at the stove with Pharrell. It just took all of the, you know what I'm saying, gravitas out of his marketing setting for me.
I'll say this, after that, so following those albums, the next two albums was Blueprint 3 and Magna Carta Holy Grail, which are two albums that I do not really revisit. I do not really revisit them at that often. There's records on both of them that I like, but I can't tell you the last time I've listened to either one of those albums in full.
Right.
But
life had changed.
That, 4-4-4.
Life had changed for niggas. Streaming had came in. You got to pick and choose which little one record you gonna get or want listen to.
Yeah.
You know. he trying to keep up with the times. And then that's why you had to respect 444, because he trying to give you something that you're going to listen to all the way through. You know what I'm saying? He's trying, mm-hmm. how do I combat this single serve effort of the music industry and give you a project that you want to dig into? So I respect it for that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what he does next or if he does next, but whatever the nigga did, he done did it all. Shit. He done went further than any other rap shit you could think of. So when you at the edge, what else left to do?
Well, that's the rumor. The rumor is, allegedly, from what Irv Gotti said, he said that Jay-Z told him, look, that's all he got. He's done.
And you believe Irv Gotti?
I don't know if I believe that. I don't know. I don't know if that would be the first person you would tell. But that's what he said at the Drink Champs. He said, Jay told him, look, that's it. I'm done. I don't know what made him unburden himself. But you know, Irv did play a big part in his rise, but it just still feels like not the place to really put that. That wasn't the vessel for that information to get out. I will say this too, though. I mean, it's been, you know, Jay is the king. I think the undisputed king of, you know, obviously a lot of the coke rap, but like deal rap. Mm-hmm. Like deal rap. Like, I don't think there's been too many people. Drake has tried to take the mantle on deal rap. There might be a few other people that got good deal rap, but like listening to Blueprint earlier today and listening to PSA, I think that might be the de facto deal rap record.
Yeah, you nigga. Know, like yeah, that invented deal rap.
That shit make everybody want to get some money.
Right.
Like, you put some shit together. Like, woo-wee. Yeah.
1 million, 2 million, man. 3 million, four, nigga. Shit.
Come on.
Come on.
Just, what he said, just 5 months or some shit like
that. 40 million
yeah,
more.
Come on now. Rape and Def Jam. Like, niggas at Def Jam was like, but wait a minute. We're marketing the album. Right. Why? Yeah, nah. Everybody, it's up. It's up for all of y'all.
Nigga, I'm paying niggas back for what they did to the Cold Crush, nigga.
Word. Cold Crush was like, yeah,
nigga, let me hold
cut
something.
Cut me in. Nigga, phone ain't ring yet.
Hey, man.
Nigga, phone's keeping the phone close just in case. Man, it's been 50 years.
It ain't. It ain't too many niggas that have done it. You know what I'm saying? They can even get the deals. When Drake came, the irony of Drake is that Jay-Z was so fucking big at this time. You know what I'm saying? He doing deals, Budweiser, the festival.
Samsung.
You know, out here selling Carol's Daughter. Like, the nigga was out of there. You know what I'm saying? Nigga doing the fucking Brooklyn Nets, designing the whole fucking arena and the quietly as kelp, the block. You know what I'm saying? That shit sits on, and the condos that are associated with it.
Yeah.
So he's so far out of there. He's untouchable. You know what I'm saying? You got to go to Steve Stout. And Steve Stout already know this man is untouchable. So you're not getting close unless you got a super heavy check that sometimes don't even match up. You know what I'm saying? Like Budweiser, Jay-Z never matched up. I never seen Jay-Z hold a Budweiser can ever. But they gave him a big ass bag. So when Drake came, it was Ross, it was Jeezy, it was Waka, it was Gucci. So it started to splinter. Yeah. You had that street rap like Gucci now, and then you had Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when Drake fell into the scene, He was an obvious marketing choice, and I was doing that shit then. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, hell yeah, Drake, let's go. Let's go fucking sell some sponsorships, because you are the best thing coming. Because you could rap. You got music that hits in the club. You know what I'm saying? You're going to show up to the motherfucking signing, and you know what I'm saying? Like, you perfect. Like, it was nobody in his way, and all he had to do was keep making hits. And from the first time, shit, Drake ruined my life. Not really him, per se. But I sold that package for the America's Most Wanted tour, Lil Wayne tour, because Wayne wasn't going to do no signings and shit like that. But Drake would. Mm-hmm. He was new. You know what You know what I'm saying? He was probably making $20,000 a show at the time. Chorus was like, yo, we want in on the light skin, nigga. Cool. Mm-hmm. Boom. Do a deal for the tour. Do a deal to perform at the goddamn FAMU Atlanta Classic, which was $75,000. So overall, it's a $300,000-something package. And I'm like, shit, yeah, we about to eat, baby. This nigga goes out on the tour, America's Most Wanted, tears ACL on the second date in Philadelphia. I was like, God damn, nigga, I worked 8 months on that shit. That made me quit fucking with other people's shit. You know what I'm saying? Mm. I was like, man, fuck this, man. I bought me a camera and started doing my own shit because I seen content as the next wave for that I could jump into and make something happen. And I did that shit because it was like, man, that was a lot of work just to, that's, you know what I'm saying, with all these contingencies and shit, you know what I'm saying? And so, but the nigga was perfect. It was nobody in his way. There was no rapper that was close to being able to get the deal money, how Drake was able to get it after Jay-Z had ascended so far ahead of everybody.
Yeah. He had all that duality. You know, singing, rapping, and then, you know, performing, but then going to the meetings and shit like that. Yeah. He definitely had that duality.
And had
That's wild that ACL.
Go ahead, had a sensibility to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people got it, but they don't want to go to the fucking meeting. They don't want to sign no, they don't want to go sign no autographs and shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
This nigga still coming into his concerts through the crowd. Partially through the crowd. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know.
Coming out like
optics.
Coming out like a boxer. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
All them expensive seats. Yeah. I'm coming out in the expensive seats.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And they receiving all bras, you know.
Yeah, that's, he's still in touch with the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on now. The meet and greet. what was I going to say? Yo, yeah, man. Yeah, so salute to the Blueprint. Great album. Yeah, I've been tapping into just listening to music more. You know, for a while I was definitely heavy podcasting. You know, but something about music that is just irrefutable is just, for me, how that shit can generate a mood. You know, just turn a song on. It's like a real life needle drop. In real life, you can put some shit on and it could take you right to the energy you need. It's like a drug. You know, that shit'll get right there. You like, okay, this is exactly, I'm feeling this. This is the spark. This is the little serotonin hit, you know. Serotonin, yeah. Maybe dopamine. I don't know. Let me go to Google before I put that on the record. Y'all give me some grace on that. But yeah, so that was that. Shout out to Easy LP too, just on a random note. I think his catalog is super slept on, but I was speaking of just generating a fucking mood and a vibe. I was listening to Royal Flush's Ice Down Medallions. And that beat is just so fucking crazy. That shit could lead to hazardous driving. That shit was so,
I laughed at it. I was like, huh?
That beat is so fucking crazy. It's such a moment too, like a moment in time. Like, I remember when that shit came out, like, what it meant and how it resonated. And that, yeah, man, it was just one of those. And sometimes you haven't heard a record in so long and then you turn that shit on and it's just like right there. Mm-hmm. Boom. So yeah. Yeah, so I've been on that, man. Just, you know, this music is generating the moods and shit. But you know, I got a question for you. See if you hip, did you know about this? Did you know, maybe you did, that putting a period at the end of a text kind of connotes that you could either be angry or don't want to be bothered or is kind of poor text etiquette?
No. I have no fucking text etiquette. I don't know. I'm not going to type all caps unless I mean some shit. But
I knew that. Yeah, go ahead.
But if I'm texting somebody, you know, man, and I observe that it may need a period, I'm going to fucking put a period.
Right. I'm same way. I'm all about punctuation. Put a period there. That was the end of the statement. Wow.
So who told you otherwise?
Somebody told me. They were like, yo, you know, when you, like, yo, you text weird. This woman said, you text weird. You like, you all right? You going to be bothered? Are you good? I was like, what you talking about? They was like, yo, you know that. That's, they said, I think they said text law. They might even said law, not even etiquette, not even, you know, like common practice.
Yeah, you out, like, you out there dating young.
Nah, ain't even that. Ain't even that. Nah, no. Hilarious. No. Nah, not that, like that. But, yo, I had to look the shit up because it blew my mind. I looked it up. Sure enough, this is a thing. And I started going through texts. It definitely is a generational thing. But it ain't as, you know, seismic as you think. But it was... I was looking at some of my little text conversations with certain people, and a lot of motherfuckers, there was no periods at the end of the text. It kind of blew my mind. It kind of really blew my mind. Yo, y'all, you check it out. Let me know if y'all knew about that in the comments. Let me know if you knew about that. Let me know if you didn't know about that. Let me know if this is a revelation to y'all as well.
Okay.
Well, Yeah.
But back to the music.
Go ahead, man.
I ain't got nothing on no text etiquette. You know what I'm talking about?
Go ahead. You right.
I've been on some music too, you know what I'm saying? And you know what I'm saying, with this the way that this head is split, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Everything is different. You know what I mean? You take in everything differently, you know what I mean? And
right.
I was talking about this with my physical therapist today. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Where before she was talking about, actually wasn't my physical therapist. It was, it's actually a lady that I shot maybe about 7-8 years ago with Laura Checkaway. We shot with her.
Right.
And she's like a neuro something. You know what I'm saying? Something to do with the brain. And her dad was like a famous neuroscientist. You know, at the time, you know nothing about that. You don't know what it means. You know what I'm saying? She's telling you how certain foods react with certain things. She's talking about nootropics and how you know what I'm saying, how you take in the world. It was a great conversation. You know what I'm saying? But
mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do with that at the time. Now, who knew that I would need this shit? And so I talked to Laura the other day, and she was like, yo, you should talk to Daisy. I'm like, yeah, that'd be a dope idea. Man, she got way more information than my goddamn physical therapist, I tell you that. And so, yeah. So
who's Daisy? Daisy's the one from the documentary?
No, she's not from this. I forgot why we went to shoot her, for real. But she's in D.C. She's like a neuro something.
Okay.
She study the mind and teach motherfuckers how to use their mind in corporate settings now. But she was like in other types of settings before. So she just enjoyed talking about that shit. And in this particular state, when shit ain't working and you trying to figure shit out, you need somebody who just love to talk about that shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody else is looking at you like, nigga, pull your shit together, man. You know what I'm saying? You talking about your mind ain't connected, nigga. Nope, you can't show it because people hear you talking like this, they think it's all good, but it ain't. You know what I'm saying? It's certain shit that that you're able to do to even put shit together that you're not able to do, which is frustrating than a motherfucker. But she dropped so much game on me today, nigga. But she was just saying how one, like, music is certain music that's healing. It's certain artists that are healing, you know what I'm saying? And that could put your mind in a space where it is soothed or be able to create new neural pathways and shit like that. She gave me a list of people who she thought. But I threw one on the table. Because since I've been down, my daughter had my AirPods, and a friend of mine they sent me some AirPods, you know what I'm saying, in the hospital, and I wasn't really fucking with shit, but it helped me to turn on some music. And then my pops had sent me this link to Pharoah Sanders. When I know Pharoah Sanders, I've listened to him before, you know what I'm saying? I know exactly what he do. I put it on, but the mood that it set in my new mind was so totally different, you know what I'm saying? It kind of just settled things in and started, it felt like it was moving shit in the right place. I'm like, man, what the fuck is going on? But it was just like a strange observation of how music is actually working within your mind. And because at this point, I need it. You know what I'm saying? It ain't like a passive thing. I'm just, you know, passing by. Oh, there's some music on. It's like, wait a minute. What the fuck is that thing doing? And Pharoah Sanders has some joints that's like, yo, yeah, it's therapeutic in the way that it's working with me. So I fucks with that. Mm-hmm. And lately, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Not that I'm biased because I work at Revolt, but Diddy got some joints on that album. There's some, and you know what I'm saying? Mm. I ain't even no R&B nigga like that. That nigga got a couple of joints on there. I mean, there's a lot of joints on there, but there's two that's like, yo.
Which two you fucking with? He does have some shit on there, but which two you fucking with?
The two is one called What's Love Number 2, and then Tough Love Number 7 with Sway Lee. And man, it's just the beat. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way that the beats go. It's not like intentional go out there and bop your head or go out there and do something. It's kind of like, nah, chill. Listen to this shit. This shit is bumping. If this shit was outside, it would be bumping. This shit is bumping inside, nigga. Lay back, rock to this shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? I got so many fucking ideas off those two records that I didn't really go explore the rest of it that much yet. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I am sometimes. I get into the one or two that set the right tone for the time and get stuck there. But I didn't expect that to happen on this record. You know, so I expected it to be some bops, you know what I'm saying? Some R&B grooves. I'm not really like an R&B person, but these two joints like sucked you in and was like, yo, I don't even know what the words fucking saying because it don't matter to me. I don't even really hear R&B words. But the way that the groove going, how they doing the words and how they, it's like almost like a foreign language, but the shit is, you know, to me, it feels incredible to be working alongside of those records.
That's right. Nah, I dig it. You know, speaking of Diddy is such a context in himself, right? It's very singular. Like, you know, in these last year and a half, 2 years or whatever, I remember him saying on The Breakfast Club, you know, he was very much concerned about his legacy and he was kind of reclaiming his legacy, right? Mm-hmm. And you could see that he was intentional about that. Because for a while, he kind of fell back. Mm-hmm. I think we might even talked about it a couple weeks ago, just in the way of how some of the bigger artists, Diddy, Jay, the big New York artists, were not in New York anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And New York, you could feel it in New York. There's a new generation of New York artists, but like that era, the feel of that era is gone. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize it until it reemerges. Mm-hmm. So in the way that he would do his marketing, like the way that he can go from being in the cut away to like outside and damn near omnipresent again in his own way to where like you can tell he's turning this up. You could see a person in real life rev up their presence, like rev it up and tap into the whole relentless, you know, y'all motherfuckers is going to get tired before I get tired type of shit. I'm back type of shit, you know? So there's that. But then on this album, and I've only listened to it maybe once. I haven't listened to it, and it was kind of half in the car and half at the crib. So I haven't really given it the dedicated listen that I want to give it. Mm-hmm. But when I did listen to it, it reminded me of everything. You know, it was like the history of like this, especially his, the R&B angle, like from his Uptown era, early, you know, particularly his Uptown era, like his Mary, his Jodeci, you know, that type of shit to where the soundscapes that he can create that are so specific to the shit that he did, you know, and how he can craft some shit. And even on this album, he got, you know, people that are fairly unknown, but they just sound good on the record because he knows how to really manipulate this mood. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, it's so specific to him. Nobody, it just, it almost, it's funny because like back in the days when he, you know, take hits from the 80s, you know, that whole thing, and he would flip Diana Ross samples and shit like that. Now he's flipping like 702 samples or even flipping shit that he sampled before, you know what I mean? Whether it's Herb Albert or whatever. It's even that, like the way that you flip these samples that is not the most always nuanced. It ain't Dilla. You know what I'm saying? It's Diddy, you know? And it's just like, wow, this shit is like, okay, this is something that we haven't seen in a minute. And this man came literally and reclaimed his legacy as he said he would. I think that's pretty interesting. I think that's, I mean, that's, it struck me. I'll say that.
Right. Yeah, man. It's like, you know, can't stop, won't stop. And it's really a place for all of us to look to be like, you know, it's one of these things like today, you know what I'm saying? Before I talked to Daisy about this, that blew my mind all the way open. It's like you're stuck. You know what I'm saying? Like me, I'm stuck in this body. You know what I'm saying? And I can't really develop new things at this particular time. And so what am I doing to continue? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I move forward? How do I make shit? You know what I'm saying? And then you start to think about it and you're like, nigga, you got enough shit, you know what I'm saying, in your fucking notebooks to fucking live a life off of if you actually just do them. You know what I'm saying?
Start
with that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't even worry about no new shit because you got enough shit. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of us got enough shit to fucking rock out for. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes people only get one shit. You know what I'm saying? And you run this motherfucker with a whole gang of shit that you ain't even doing nothing with. How about start with the shit that's already there? You know what I'm saying? You got 4 or 5 projects that you was already working on. You got fucking notebooks and notebooks and notebooks and notebooks of shit that you never done. So don't ask for no new shit right now. You know what I'm saying? Get to some shit that you already got. Get to some shit that you already know. Get to some shit that everybody already know you about. We all, a lot of times, me, myself, personally, you always worried about how you going to fucking craft some new shit ahead of the curve and just, you know what I'm saying, I'm in the future. You know what I mean? And then you play yourself all the way out because then you do it. Then, you know what I'm saying, you so far ahead of the curve, nobody know what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? When real shit is always happening within the moment, within the culture, within what's happening right now, how people moving, how people thinking right now, not how you want them to be. And a lot of times I fell into that space of, yeah, it should be like this. I'm going to and I'm going to make people do this. Nah, nigga, fuck that. Stop it. You running out of time, nigga. Nigga, take this shit you got and rock with that.
Nah, I get it. Nah, that's real.
And that's what he has always been able to do. You know what I'm saying? Jay-Z, you know what I mean? Niggas like Jay-Z is the nigga in the hood with the slick-ass mouth that's funny as fuck. You know what I'm saying? That could rattle off some shit right quick. You be like, damn, how that nigga came up with that? But it's always within the lexicon of what's happening right now that fuck you all the way up. It's not no nigga spouting out some new shit. You know what I'm saying? He might take that old shit and flip it on his head, but it's never outside of what it is until we got to 444, and it's just outside of what niggas kind of know. You know what I'm saying? That's like the conundrum of being famous and wealthy and outside of the curb. So, you know what I'm saying? For us or for people that's listening and that's creating shit, man, you got to create within what it is. You know what I'm saying? Not saying that you can't create no future shit, no new out of the box shit, because that shit do work sometimes. But when you're trying to hit, when you're trying to be relevant in the space, it's what it is. That's why when you look at Diddy make his comeback, he jumped right into what it was, not into I'm super rich and I could do this and I could do that. He jumped into, okay, I'm gonna get me a chick that's already in the streets, that know what it is, mm-hmm. know who's who. I'm gonna invite all these people to my house and do how I do, cause these niggas ain't never seen no shit like that. You know what I'm saying? And right. and we gonna get to it, you know? And I think that part of it really makes a difference in what you put out, because now you're putting out stuff that people actually deal with. You know what I'm saying? They know about.
Right. Yeah. No, it's the truth. I think it's I think the the thing though sometimes is recognizing, like you said, like, you know, you had a moment where you had to recognize the value of what you had in that book,
mm-hmm.
right? Sometimes, personally, sometimes if I'm not careful, if I'm not paying attention, I can put so much stock in like new, mm-hmm. you know, comedy, new material, you want a new hour, you know, all of this other shit.
Right.
And sometimes you still got a lot of, you know, meat left on the shit that you were fucking with.
Right.
And you got some laughs off of that shit and you kind of abandon it because the excitement of quote unquote being prolific
mm-hmm.
is seductive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like really like ruminate in those thoughts that you have. Like, you know, it's funny. I've talked to a couple friends of mine, comics, and I'm like, you know, what you do when you feel like, you know, you inspirate, you don't feel that inspired, you know? Mm-hmm. And these various times, but they, you know, two cats that I know particularly, they was just like, you know, I typically just go back into my old material and I, you know, stuff maybe I used to do that didn't work or stuff that I, you know what I mean? Like just old material or stuff that I did that worked, but now I can expound on it. Maybe just that thought, you know, that idea, I can come from a different angle on that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you used to always say, you know, you got everything you need. You know what I'm right. saying? And I think there is this prize that we put on next shit, being forward thinking, being cutting edge, being ahead of the curve, you know, doing something different that can psych you into not really focusing on all of the shit you've cultivated.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right. you know, and yeah, it's a hell of a, it's real to think about that. It's right. real to think about that. That shit is, yeah, no, that's super valid. And, you know, and obviously, I mean, you feel how you feel, but, you know, look, I don't, you know, I mean, obviously you live where you live. You live in the body you live in, but I don't think you stuck in your body. I mean, we all are stuck in our body at a certain level, but you know.
If you look at, to me, how I look at it, you know what I'm saying? I say this, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Not that I'm going to stay there. Not that I wonder.
Right, okay.
I'm recognizing it, but gotcha. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to fucking fall victim to it. And it was, oh my God.
Okay.
What it is that you're in this body. You know what you could do. You know what I'm saying? But uh-huh. then you can't physically right. do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it takes gotcha. Effort to do everything. It takes effort to get up from the couch and go to the refrigerator when your mind has to think about all of the steps to get there. Like, usually you don't have to think about that shit. You just get up and go.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? When your mind has mm-hmm. to be like, okay, I got to get over there. Okay, there's a wall if I need to brace myself. You know what I'm saying? What am I going in there to get? I got about maybe 8-10 minutes to do whatever I'm going to do before I have to sit down again. You know, shit, you thinking about all this stuff. What am I going in there to do? Then your mind is like, nigga, all you know is when the groceries was put in, you saw some avocados and some eggs and some bread. Okay, I'm going to go there. I'm going to make some avocado toast. And you wobble your ass over there. That's how it feels. And then you mm-hmm. you get there, and there ain't no more avocados. You're like, fuck! Now you're done. Because now your mind ain't making up no new shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just looking at a blank slate. So now you got to go back, sit your ass down again, and fucking Grubhub that shit, Uber Eats. You know what I'm saying? Because where you at is different. You know what I'm saying? It's a different space. It's like somebody, like I was telling you earlier, it's like somebody took your body, on your body side, it's like somebody took your body apart and then put it together with like little pegs like you used to do with like paper people. You know what I'm saying? Like you put them up on the wall and you can move their hands up and down. You know what I mean? With these little pegs that you can turn. That's how it feels because it's not all working together. You know what I'm saying? That's just the part you see. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like your stomach, your whole gastrointestinal department is run by your brain and it's not moving the same. Like, you know, like you probably hear me on this thing. It's these little burps that come that they not burps. It's just like air that's somewhere in there that's doing whatever the fuck it's doing and I don't have no control over it. You know what I'm saying? It's like in between a burp and a cough and it's neither one. So these, that's obvious stuff, you know what I'm saying? But then the less obvious stuff, like what's going on with your brain, is frustrating because you know, man, I could think through this shit. I could rattle that off. You know what I'm saying? I walk in here, y'all talking about that shit. You know what I'm saying? It's like in college, like, you know, you could just retain information and create new information out of it. And my cousin and my roommate, they were both pharmacy majors and they would have study groups. And you'll hear them studying. So you taking in, like, in the background, you're taking in all this information. And so they'll be like, yeah, such and such drug, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, yeah, you give 2 ounces to the baby, blah-blah-blah. And then you've heard already that you ain't supposed to give that to no babies. You know what I'm saying? That shit caused diarrhea. So instead of just saying, hey, nah, that ain't right, you create up a whole new scenario why you shouldn't give that to a baby. Because it's going to get a baby diarrhea and then all these other things going to happen. Like I used to do that shit just off of just instinct. It wasn't nothing. You weren't even thinking about the shit. I wasn't even involved with their study group. But to try to do something like that now, create up a new scenario and all, it ain't happening. And that's frustrating. It's like, nigga, that's who I am. I go in a meeting, I could create some shit like nothing because that's what I do. But now, you can't do that shit. I went to a meeting last week just to, you know what I'm saying, drop in. And most of it, you just sitting there listening. You know what I'm saying? And now I got all the information. I could retain all that shit. I know exactly what's happening. But I'm not participating in that shit. And to me, that shit ain't what it is. You know what I'm saying? But as you start getting this new information, and you start working with yourself, working with these new problems, you start to realize that maybe that don't need to be who you are. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you need to be something else, you know? And who is that person? I don't have no answers to that, but that was a breakthrough even just putting that question on the paper because I couldn't put nothing on the paper. I've opened up my shit and that shit been blank since I've been in the hospital. You know what I'm saying? This weekend, I was able to put some stuff on the paper. And one of them is, you know, is essentially, who are you? And once you start to figure out who you are, you could work with that. You know what I'm saying? And things will come to you around that. You know, like the lady was telling me, your neural pathways will start building. You know what I'm saying? And what it is, one thing I came up just in conversation and having that conversation is like I could feel that part of my brain there, but it feels like it's disconnected. Like there's no wire to connect that part to the rest of it. So she's like, you're right. You know what I'm saying? And then I said, it feels like there's nothing. It's not connected yet. And she was like, you see what you used that word right there? Yet connotes that in the future that it will. You know what I'm saying? Because it's there, and you have that optimisticness to know that it can connect again. And, you know, so to me, it just says continue doing the shit that you're doing the way you're doing it. And when that's supposed to connect, it will. And when it does, it will. But until then, work with the shit you got, because we ain't got time to lay down. We ain't got time to be like, you know what I'm saying, crying about this shit. We ain't got time. Oh, man, you know what I'm saying? I can't do what I used to do and blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? It's, it's just like today. I was late getting on here because I made one mistake, and now in this particular state, you can't just double back fast and do the shit, spin around, go grab your motherfuckers. Nah, you got to take your time, get back up the stairs, one step at a fucking time. Shit's frustrating, but you got to do it. And another thing she said to me today, you got to change the E to a O. No, you got to change the O to an E. You know what I'm saying? And that means if you're saying, a lot of times we say, I got to do something. Damn, I got to do something. And change that O to an E and be like, I get to do something. I get a chance to talk on the pod. You know what I'm saying? I get a chance to even walk these steps and go grab my shit and double back, catch my fucking breath and be late. You know what I'm saying? I get to do that. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not, I got to do it. And then you put all this on yourself when it ain't there like that. So that's all I got to say about that. I feel like I'm down in a deep hole.
Nah, that's real shit. My bad. I apologize. I ain't want to, dismiss what you were saying. You know what I'm saying? Just on some old nah. You know, like you living this. You know what I'm saying? That's real shit, though.
Right, so when I say trapped, I don't mean I'm stuck there forever. It just means that I can't do with what I got what I used to be able to do. So I had to find another way to do those things.
I hear that. I respect that for sure. Shit, man, we might as well transform and roll out.
No doubt. You know what
I mean? We get to be on the mic yet again, talk to these people.
Right up.
You know what I'm saying? Get to chop it up with you again, man. Feels good. You know, Muhammad back, you know? Fucking the insight, the fucking angles and all of this shit, man. I miss this shit. Some of the shit, you know what I mean? These theories, you know what I mean? The positioning of shit like that.
Right.
Nah, nigga, this is what the people miss. Right. The people want.
Nigga say that. You know what I mean? Theories.
So we here. Nah, for real. We here shit. What's I gonna say before I get up out of here? Let the people know. I got dates coming up, bunch of shit. I'm on the, got my local shit. Actually, all my stuff on DamianLemon.com, being very diligent about posting where I'm going to be. But I'm going to be this weekend, I'll be at New York Comedy Club. I'll be at the Borgata, I want to say the weekend of the 13th through the 15th out in Atlantic City. I know I'm going to be out in D.C. This is a minute. This is in February, but I'm about to be in D.C. I need y'all to come on out. This I ain't been to D.C. in a minute, and people been saying, when you coming to D.C.? So I'm coming. Fire. I think that's February 8th through the 10th. Fuck it with that. I'm going to be at Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. That's coming up soon. I'm going to have some dates on that, but that's coming up soon, and there might be some more stuff, in the moment. But, yeah, man, that's all I got. You wanna hit them with anything? Let them know anything?
Well, I'll be out in the cosmos, you know what I'm saying? Thinking and putting shit together. I won't be anywhere physically pretty much unless you had the therapy. But, you know, I just want everybody to remember, you know what I'm saying, everything you need, you already got. Take what you got, make what you want.
Shit is real. That's 100. Until next time, tell a friend to tell a friend.
And even an enemy.
To get in the conversation. We out.
Conversation.